World Economic Forum kicks off today, and inequality growth will be a key focus. From London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. In about an hour, Chinese President Xi Jinping will deliver a virtual keynote to a group that would usually be gathering in Davos, Switzerland. It kicks off a week of discussions focusing on the challenges facing a pandemic-ravaged world. Today, the charity Oxfam unveiled a new report showing it could now take the world's poorest populations more than a decade to recover from the virus, and it forecasts 500 million more people could be living in poverty by 2030. Here's Danny Sriskandarwaja, chief executive of Oxfam GB.
Just as this time when so many people around the world are feeling insecure about their jobs, their lives, their livelihoods, the richest in our society seem to be making windfall profits from this pandemic. And that's a tragedy that needs to be addressed urgently by governments around the world.
So the big question now is what's caused this growth in inequality. Simeon Diankov, a researcher at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, told me there are several contributing factors.
One, it is affecting some sectors much more than others, in particular the services sectors and the sectors where you need social interaction. That happen to be mostly sectors where women work. So as a result, the gender gap in these sectors has increased tremendously in some countries. And the second reason is around the world, there are a number of people who work in part-time or temporary jobs, and that can be seasonal work like in tourism or transport. And the first group that got severely hurt by the pandemic is precisely these part-time workers.
You know, there's been lots of data showing the rich have gotten richer, the poor poorer. How do you think rescue efforts from both central banks and governments have contributed to these inequalities that you just lined out?
Well, the majority of governments, especially in the advanced economies at the beginning of the crisis, pumped up a lot of money into the economy. That liquidity quickly went into stock markets and real estate, which benefit mostly rich people who already have money on stock markets. In contrast, it is the poorer members of society that typically are temporary jobs, part-time jobs. So for both of these reasons, inequality has increased greatly just in a matter of a few months.
Why do you think it's so hard to make these kinds of policies have an equal effect across the population? Why haven't we seen that?
Well, because this is a crisis unlike, let's say, the previous several crises. And in fact, this is the first crisis, at least in the United States, over 100 years. Research shows that the gender gap is increasing. The previous crisis from a decade ago mostly affected manufacturing sectors where men typically work. This crisis is different. I think governments were not prepared for that. And the early response through central banks tended to actually benefit the richer members of society.
I think some may sort of be scratching their head because it seemed the whole purpose of some of these rescue efforts was to keep people in jobs, paychecks flowing. Do you think there's just a better way to sort of focus these policies to make it more equal?
So some countries have succeeded. The picture is not grim everywhere. The countries that have succeeded, again, some of the Scandinavian countries, East European countries succeeded, which is that they quickly reoriented their policies towards the sectors that are most hurt. So in other words, rather than having policies for the whole economy, equal policies, focus on the most affected sectors. The development of inequality is rising very rapidly in the United States. It started very rapidly rising in the United Kingdom, but in the last two or three months, it started to shrink again, fortunately, while in most of the European countries, it actually never rose.
So when we look at sort of what the economy of the future looks like, how do you think policymakers should focus on building a more inclusive economy right now and not waiting until the pandemic is over to deal with some of these problems?
In the first 6 to 9 months, all recovery programs were focusing on let's keep as many jobs as possible in the existing sectors, in the existing firms. Now it's time to start asking a different question, which is what is the post-COVID economy going to look like? Which sectors are likely to be down for a significant period of time? And therefore, let's start retraining, let's start reorganizing our schemes towards this new economy. In the United Kingdom, there is already an initial attempt in doing that with the Coronavirus Future Fund, which is asking the question, let's support some of the businesses of the future, if you like. That's a more difficult task, but still possible. Because otherwise, even when the coronavirus eases out, people are going to find themselves in sectors that where the demand is lacking for years to come. We need to shift now.
Lots of work still yet to be done. Simeon Diankov, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Checking the numbers now, global shares are just slightly higher across the world this morning. Meanwhile, fresh UN data show China has overtaken the U.S. as the world's top destination for foreign direct investment. New investments to the United States companies dropped by nearly half last year, while funds to Chinese firms grew 4%. If you spent your weekend curled up like I did, binging a new film, you're not alone in the habit. A French series called Lupin is on track to smash first-month viewership records on Netflix, previously set by The Queen's Gambit and Bridgerton. The drama, which follows a so-called gentleman burglar, shot to the number one spot in Brazil, Argentina, Germany, Italy, and Spain.
I'm a janitor at the Louvre. The artwork that I clean, they're worth millions. Next Friday, a foundation will put a necklace up for auction. The necklace belonged to Marie Antoinette. We're gonna steal it. Go in as janitors and come out millionaires. Any questions?
It's poised to reach 70 million households by February 5th. Marcela Said, one of the action show's directors, explains how foreign language films are gathering momentum across the globe.
You know, my last film is called Los Perros. It's maybe 50,000 people watch the film. I have no idea. And now when you talk to me about 7 million people watching my episodes, I mean, it means a lot of visibility, something that I never expected.
Now, Netflix and the French film industry have for years sort of gone head to head. The Cannes Film Festival essentially blocked Netflix films from being screened a few years ago. What do you think has led to not just acceptance of Netflix in the industry, but collaboration? And is there an appetite, do you think, for more of that?
Netflix is working almost like a studio, and this is very appealing. And sometimes they can give you even more freedom than a producer because they don't have this money thing. Like, we need to earn money, or otherwise, you know, the film is not going to work. So they can take even more risk. When you see a film like Roma, the Mexican film, black and white, shot in cinema, I mean, telling his own story. I mean, this is author cinema, but in Netflix. And I think this is risky. This is audacious. This is showing to the filmmakers that Netflix, it can be a real partner for us.
There have been plenty of challenges this year with the coronavirus crisis. Did you guys have to contend with any of that? And how did you work through it to deliver the show on time?
Yeah, I was shooting my episode when COVID happened here. I have to keep on shooting like 2 months later with a protocol. So with the mask, with the doctors, with the temperature, with all these restrictions. It was hard. It was stressful. We have to change some of the scenes. I mean, so that was good also to realize that even though we have COVID, we can still work and we can do our job anyway. I'm happy to be working for Netflix because we are locked in our house. We cannot go out, and cinemas in France, they are closed. This is a very difficult period for artists, of course.
But the good news is fans are eager to devour season 2 of your series.
Yeah.
How long will they have to wait, and what can they expect?
I have no idea how long, but I can tell you that the next 5 episodes, they are already shot. So they are in post-production, but I have no idea when they are going to be ready.
Can you give us any hints of what to expect in those 5 episodes?
No, of course not. But a lot of action, for sure, and emotion. So, yeah.
Well, that's plenty of anticipation then that we'll leave our listeners with. Marcela Said, director of the hit Netflix series Lupin. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you.
Well, there's lots more with Marcela over on marketplace.org later this morning. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.